Concerto Grosso by Ralph Vaughan Williams. James Judd conducted the New Zealand Symphony Orchestra.
Welcome to Radio Vault, boys and girls, the last local voice you heard on this station is the first local voice you heard on this station. We have got for you today a full 2 hours of Jack Benny. For many, many years, he was the number one radio show on NBC originally, then CBS. We'll be taking a listen to, as I said, a full 2 hours of Jack Benny. These are four consecutive shows from 1953. March of that year, coincidentally. We're going to kick it off in just a moment with The Snows of Kilimanjaro from March 8, 1953. We go from there to how Palm Springs was founded. You know, walk through Beverly Hills. Then the Mississippi Gambler episode. So certainly something you want to hang around for sure. We have in the background something a little different. This is the E.L. Vilner Big Band, E.L. Vilner from Israel. Let's listen for a minute. And there you have it, the E.L. Vilner Big Band to open the show, Swingin' Uptown, title track from their CD of the same name. And we are ready for the festivities for today. Once again, let us go back to March 8, 1953. And the Jack Benny Show, originally sponsored by a cigarette company, which shall go nameless.
The Jack Benny Program. Jack Benny with Barry Livingston, Rochester, Dennis Day, Bob Crosby, the Sportsman Quartet, and yours truly, Don Willis. Ladies and gentlemen, yesterday Jack Benny returned from a trip to New York, where he attended a dinner given for Bob Hope by the Friars Club, Right now it's morning, and Jack is just getting up.
Good morning, Rochester.
Good morning, boss. How'd you sleep?
Oh, pretty good. Only I was awfully cold last night.
You're cold every night. Maybe you haven't got enough blood.
Rochester, I'm not anemic. Now lay out my clothes and get me a clean shirt. I don't want to be late for rehearsal.
Yes. Not anemic. I wonder what he'd say if he found out that every morning I sneak in the bathroom and put ketchup on his razor to keep up his morale. Now, let's see. The shirt should be in this drawer. Socks, handkerchief, sweater. Uh-oh, what's this? A bottle of ketchup.
Rochester, how about my shirt?
Coming, boss! Here it is.
Oh, thanks.
Say, boss, while I was getting the shirt out of the drawer, I noticed a bottle of ketchup.
Oh, you did, eh?
Yeah. Where'd you get it?
Rochester, come here a minute.
Huh?
I got a little surprise for you.
Surprise?
Yeah. If you keep putting it on, I'm going to keep scraping it off. I'm not wasting it just to please my vanity. Rochester, look, I want to... I get it.
Hello, Jack.
Oh, hello, Mary. Come on in.
When'd you get back from New York?
Oh, about 4 o'clock this morning. It was a nice trip, though.
How'd the Bob Hope dinner turn out?
Oh, it was swell. Everybody was there. Gee, what celebrity. And you know what? I sat on the dais right next to Bernard Baruch.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
You haven't seen him since you went to school together.
You know, Mary, you always say the cutest things just before you get a cut in salary.
Oh, I was only teasing. Now, you better hurry. We'll be late for rehearsal.
Why? We've got a lot. Oh, my goodness, look what time it is. I never realized it was this late.
You still have to shave.
I know, I know. It won't take long. I'll take off my tie.
I'll get the razor.
I'll get the ketchup.
We haven't time for that now. You go get the car, Rochester. We'll be down in a minute. Try the motor again, Rochester.
Yes.
Try it again, Rochester. Only this time, step on the throttle, advance the spark, pull out the choke, and hold down the clutch.
Keep talking, boss. So far, you haven't named one thing we've done.
All right. Try the motor again.
Jack, last month when the automobile show was in town, you said you were going down and look at a new car.
I did, but the one I wanted to buy, they're not making yet. You see, it's that revolutionary car with 3 wheels.
3 wheels? Is that good?
It's one more than we've got now.
Oh, stop. Try the motor again.
Yes, sir.
There we are. I knew we wouldn't have any trouble. Rochester, here we are at the studio.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I wish there were some place to park along the street here.
Oh, for heaven's sake, Jack, why don't you put it in a parking lot?
Yeah, I guess we'll have to. All right, Rochester, drive in here.
Oh, boy, a real parking lot. Play a lot, tell the boys down at the lodge about this.
Never mind, just go in. Now, Rochester... You go over and pay the attendant. Miss Livingston and I are going into the studio.
Yes, sir.
Come on, Mary.
Say, Jack, look at that beautiful car driving in.
Gee, what a car. A chauffeur in uniform and everything. Must be the president of the network.
Here we are, sir, CBS. Thank you, James.
Mary, it's Dennis. Let's watch this.
I'll get your things out of the car, sir. Your coat, sir.
Thank you.
Your hat, sir. Thank you.
Your Wall Street Journal.
Thank you.
Your Buck Rogers disintegrator.
Thanks.
Hey, Dennis. Dennis.
Huh? Oh, hello, Mr. Benny. Hello, Mary.
Gee, Dennis, I've never seen such a beautiful car. Where'd you get it?
Oh, my mother gave it to me for a going-away present.
Dennis, where are you going?
Well, she doesn't care as long as I go.
What?
The tank holds 300 gallons of gas.
Well, I'll chip in for the road map.
Say, Dennis, you can drive a car. How come you've got a chauffeur?
Well, I was talking to the man who prepares my income tax, and he told me I ought to get some more deductible items.
Oh, is your chauffeur deductible?
Yeah, James Deductible.
Better get into the studio or we'd be late.
Yeah, come on, let's go.
All right, fellas.
Okay, fellas, let's run through that number once more.
Hold it, Bob. Hold it. I'm here.
Oh, hi, Jack. I was just rehearsing the band.
Well, wait a minute. Aren't some of the boys missing?
Yeah, Remley, Bagby, and Sammy the drummer won't be here for the show.
Why not?
Well, last night they were listening to a quiz program, and the MC was asking questions about arithmetic.
What's that got to do with it?
Well, one of the questions was about fractions. It was, how many times will 1/5 go into 3? So they started working it out.
Uh-huh.
And by the time they killed off 22/5, they lost interest in the answer.
Can't understand. I thought when Phil Harris left, the boys would change.
Oh, they will, Jack. They will.
But when?
Well, as soon as they find out that Phil is gone.
Well, Bob, who do they think you are?
Well, I don't know, but they keep calling me Alice.
Well, don't worry, Bob. For 5 years, they thought I was Evelyn and her magic violin. Gosh, the free dinners that I've had. Well, go out with the rehearsal, Bob, so we can get into the sketch here.
Well, shall I rehearse my song first, Mr. Benny?
Yes, go ahead, Dennis. Then we'll go right on with the play. Good. And now, kids, let's rehearse the play we're going to do. Oh, Don.
Yes, Jack.
Set the scene, will you?
Okay. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we present our version of The Snows of Kilimanjaro, produced by 20th Century Fox, makers of that new picture, Niagara, starring yours truly, Don Wilson.
Don, Stick to the script. You weren't the star of Niagara.
I know, but I need the publicity. My calendars aren't selling at all.
Just read what's written, will you please?
Okay.
Spent a whole week writing.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, we present our version of The Snows of Kilimanjaro, which starred Gregory Peck, Susan Hayward, and Ava Gardner. Our story opens in the African jungle, at the foot of the majestic snow-capped mountain, Kilimanjaro.
Gregory Peck. I am a writer who came to hunt in Africa. As I lie here at death's door with the painful throbbing of my infected leg, my entire life has flashed before me. I can tell this is the end because as I look up at the hot African sky, I see two vultures circling over me. Oh, I've seen vultures before, but these two are carrying a bottle of ketchup. I was recommended to them by Duncan Hines. As my temperature rose, I felt a soft, cool hand on my forehead. It was my wife, Susan, tenderly stroking my fevered brow. And as I muttered and moaned in my delirium, she said,
"Cut out that blubbering, Mac."
I can't help it, Susan. Look at me, lying here helpless, while all the members of my safari are starving because I can't go out and hunt fresh meat for them.
Don't worry about that. This morning I went out in the jungle and killed a lion.
But wait a minute, Susan. We're out of ammunition. How did you kill the lion?
I strangled it.
God, how in the world... How in the world could you possibly bring yourself to strangle a lion?
I used one hand. I gave it a fighting chance.
When is that medicine coming? When will the plane get here? When?
The plane didn't arrive with the medicine, and I got worse. So in desperation, Susan sent for a native witch doctor. The witch doctor came, and for the next 2 hours, he kept stuffing hot sand into my mouth. When my hat got too big for me, I realized he was shrinking my head. Fortunately, I stopped him in time. But to this day, I wear a size 2 3/8. I shall never forget that witch doctor. He sprinkled me with a powder made from ground tiger teeth. Then he chanted his weird voodoo incantation.
Iganawa, Iganawa, moo, moo, moo. Tagaluga, tagaluga, moo, moo, moo. Aye.
Oh, doctor, I'm in such pain.
Here, you take them these herbs. You come morning sun, you'll feel all the better like me.
Oh, that's wonderful, doctor. How much do I owe you?
Nothing. Blue Cross.
The witch doctor left. And as the night wore on, my feverish mind was frightened by the sounds of the jungle. The roar of the lion. Yeah. The cry of the wild boar. The frightened whinny of our horses. The wild chattering of the monkeys. The maniacal screech of the hyena. Sound of the crocodile. The terrifying sound of the crocodile. I knew if I kept trying, I'd find something that Mel Blanc couldn't do. The quietness of the long night was broken by the jungle sounds, the sighing of the soft winds, and the constant beat of the talking drums by which the natives communicated with each other. When they finished, I felt a little better. Their song had put me in a romantic mood. I began to think of all the girls I had known. Constance Forsythe, Rosalind Winston, Valerie Fitzgerald, Don Wilson. I really thought of Marilyn Monroe, but Don's calendars aren't selfish. Then I began to think of the first girl I had ever really loved. It was in Spain. I met her in Madrid. Like all Latin, she was impulsive and romantic and beautiful. And best of all, she was in love with me. I shall never forget my first meeting with Maria. I said to her,
"It's a lovely place you have here, señorita."
"Gracias, señor."
"And it's very big, too."
"Sí, señor."
"Gee, it's so big. Do you know how much it costs?"
"No, I just work here. Señor May owns the company."
"There, too?"
That was how my romance with Maria started, and it blossomed rapidly. We went everywhere together, dancing, swimming. And finally, she took me to the bullfights. It was my first time at a bullfight, and I didn't know much about this Latin sport. But the traditional blare of trumpets, the first event got underway.
Here comes the bull.
Wow, he looks big.
Ooh, here comes a toreador.
Hey, dig that crazy steak knife.
It was exciting. The toreador did well, and to show its appreciation, the crowd yelled and showered him with gifts. Maria took the rose out of her hair and threw it to him. I didn't have a rose, so I just threw him my hair. But when I threw it, my hair sailed out in a wide circle and landed back on my head. It was the toupee I had bought in Australia. Yes, my thoughts were all of Maria at this time. Until I felt the throbbing of my leg, and great waves of pain swept over me and washed me back into consciousness in my camp in Africa. Susan was still standing guard. She must have realized I had been dreaming of Maria, because she said,
"Wipe that smile off your face, Mac."
"Oh, it's you, Susan. I must have been dreaming. Has the plane arrived yet with the medicine?"
"No, they were halfway across the Atlantic and they had to turn back for the peroxide."
"For my leg?"
"No, for me. I wasn't born a blonde."
Susan's voice soothed. And again I fell asleep. I forgot the pain of the present as I remembered the pleasures of the past. And it was at this point I remembered Ava. I first met Ava in Paris. Gay Paris. Ava had everything. Beauty, poise, and intelligence. But even though she was a society heiress, She insisted on earning her living by singing in a tiny French nightclub called the Bayou. I shall never forget the first time I heard her as she sang. Singing, the crowd clamored for an encore. She sang Jambalaya till someone hit her in the eye with a crawfish pie. Son of a gun, we have big fun in the bayou. Then Ava came over and sat with me.
How are you feeling?
Fine, Ava. And tonight we're going to do the town. I'm going to start by drinking champagne out of your slipper. Come on, put it on the table.
Okay, there. Go ahead, start pouring.
Take your foot out of it first. That's better. Now I'll fill the slipper with champagne for me. There. Now I'll fill your other slipper for you.
Is bigger than my right.
Oh, well, tell me. Tell me, Ava, am I the first man who ever drank champagne from your slipper?
Ah, oh, they all do.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not. When I walk home from here, I sound like Chloe coming through the swamp.
I asked Ava to marry me, but she turned me down. So I married Susan and came here to Africa. The pain in my leg now was unbearable. I'd almost given up hope when suddenly I heard a droning noise.
Look, Mac, it's the plane!
Mercy plane coming with supplies. But fate still mocked me. There was no place for the plane to land. As a last resort, the pilot swooped low over our camp and threw the medicine and peroxide out. We found the medicine and I got well, but the peroxide disappeared. So now Susan is a brunette. But somewhere in Africa, there are 200 blonde gorillas. This is the story of the snows of Kilimanjaro.
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes another program, and we'll be back with you again. What was that?
A crocodile. I finally made it.
Well, thanks, Mel. Good night, folks. We're a little late.
Jack Benny program is written by Sam Perrin, Milt Josephsburg, George Balzer, John Packerberry, and produced and transcribed by Hilliard Marks. Be sure to hear The American Way with Horace Height for Lucky Strike every Thursday over this same station. Consult your newspaper for the time.
Stay tuned for the Amos and Andy Show, which follows immediately on the CBS Radio Network. Thank you.
many sounds, the many faces of jazz and improvised music can be heard on the Spirits Rejoice radio program every Tuesday from 6 to 10 p.m. right here, WHFR.FM, WHFR Dearborn.
Earn your associate's degree in applied sciences with Henry Ford College's Automotive Technology Program. This program offers an in-depth study of multiple systems found in today's vehicles. HFC's Automotive Technology Program is fully certified by the National Institute for Automotive Technology Program by the ASE Educational Foundation. For more information on this or any other area of study, visit hfcc.edu today.
The Jack Benny Program. From the American Legion Hall in Palm Springs, California, Jack Benny, with Mary Livingston, Rochester, Dennis Day, Bob Crosby, and yours truly, Don Wilson. Ladies and gentlemen, as you probably know, our little star is completely recovered from his recent attack of influenza. But his doctors advised him to get a little sunshine and rest. So last Thursday, he got in his Maxwell and had Rochester drive him to Palm Springs.
Gosh, Rochester, no matter how many times I make the trip, I still love the ride to Palm Springs.
It is beautiful, boss.
What town are we passing through now?
Cabazon!
Are you sure? Are you sure it's Cabazon?
Certainly. We've been going through it for the past 2 hours.
I'd like to get to the springs before dark, although we're not making such bad time considering we had 3 blowouts.
5.
No, Rochester. We only had 3 blowouts.
5. The tire blew out 3 times and your hair blew out twice.
Oh, yes. The man behind us thought we lost our foxtail. I mean, anyway, we've been passing through some nice scenery. I know so many wineries and miles of vineyards.
Yeah, this is the wine country.
And you notice the cows, how sleek and fat they are? They look so contented.
They're more than contented. They're drunk.
Rochester, stop making things up, drunken cows. Of all the...
Uh-oh.
What's the matter?
We're almost out of gas. We better stop at a gas station.
Oh, all right. Now we have to go through lifting up the seat and everything. Oh, well.
I'll drive him to the station on the corner.
Yes, sir. Fill her up.
Well, how far are we from Palm Springs now?
17 miles.
17 miles, huh? Let me see. The altitude here is 3,100 feet. And the altitude of Palm Springs is 270 feet, which is a drop of 2,830 feet, which for 17 miles would be about 3.25% grade. Now, the wind is at our back, but at the pass, it becomes a headwind of about 19 miles an hour. Let me see. Put in 2.4 gallons.
Yes, Mr. Einstein.
My name isn't Einstein.
Oh, yeah, your initials are on the side of the car, B.H.
Those aren't my initials. They belong to the man I bought the car from.
B.H. Bob Hope?
No, Ben Hur.
Never mind, Roger. Just stand up and drive. Now, let's get going. We want to arrive at the springs before dark.
That was Thursday. Friday was a beautiful day, and Jack really enjoyed it. He visited Mary Livingston at the Park Lane Hotel, and they spent the afternoon around the swimming pool.
Gee, the sun feels good, Mary.
Yeah. A couple of more hours of this, and we both have beautiful tans.
Say, Mary.
Yes, Jack?
Mary, I'd like to talk to you.
What is it?
Well, it's a little embarrassing.
For heaven's sake, Jack, what is it?
Well, I don't like to mention this, but your bathing suit is awfully snug and skimpy.
Well, go in and take it off. I didn't want to lend it to you in the first place.
Well, I can't help it if Rochester forgot to pack my suit. You think I like wearing yours? I'm going to have an awful time explaining my tan to the boys in the steam room.
Pouting and enjoy yourself.
I am enjoying myself. It's a fine town for you to catch a cold in, too. There's one spot I love for vacation, though. It's Palm Springs. Come on, Mary, let's go in the pool. Last one in is a rotten egg.
Gee, I didn't know Jack could dive that well. He hasn't come up yet. I wonder what happened. Hope there's nothing wrong. Gosh, it's been nearly a minute. How can he hold his breath that long? I better jump in. Oh, good, he's coming up now.
Phew. Mary, why didn't you tell me those trunks had no string? The last time I ever wear your suit.
Good. And take off my cap. You look like a honeydew melon.
Okay, I'm getting out. Oh, it's cold when you get out. Mary, throw me a towel.
Okay, here you are.
You didn't have to throw it so hard. Help me out of the pool.
That was how Jack spent Friday. And on Saturday, feeling full of vim, vigor, and vitality, he tried his luck on the Tamarisk Golf Course with Bob Crosby.
What'd you have on this hole, Bob?
I had a par four.
Four?
Yes, Jack, four.
I was sure you took five strokes.
Oh, no, my tee shot was right down the middle. Then I used a six iron, was right on the green. My first putt just rimmed the cup, and my second putt was in.
Yeah, you're right, you did have a four. Well, I guess you win that hole.
Why, what'd you have?
12. Well, maybe I'll beat you on this next hole. Go ahead, tee off.
Okay.
Nice shot, Bob. Now stand back, please. Want to make sure it's teed up just right. Well, here I go. Missed it.
They're not making the bowls as big this year.
Oh, quiet. Stop grinning. You make me nervous. Now, here goes. There, I hit it. Hey, where'd the ball go, Bob?
Oh, you sliced it out into the rough.
Oh, well, let's go look for it.
Ba-dee-dee-dee-bom-bo-bee-bee. Da-dee-dee-dee-da-dee-do.
Yeah, it's a pretty song, Bob.
Yeah, I was going to do it on the show.
Oh, good, good. Let me hear it now. If I don't find my ball, sing an encore or something, will you?
Pretend you're happy when you're blue. It isn't very hard to do. And you'll find happiness without an end whenever you pretend. Nothing's bad as it may seem. The little things you haven't got could be a lot if you'd pretend. You'll find a love you can share, one you can call all your own. Just close your eyes, she'll be there. You'll never be alone. pretending just like me. The world is mine, it can be yours, my friends. So why don't you
song, Bob. I like the way you...
Hold it, Jack. We're walking past your bow.
Oh, where is it?
Well, it's right behind that tree. Say, you got a real bad lie there.
Oh, yes. It's about 200 yards to the green. Got to keep it low so I don't hit the branches of the tree there. And I got to get up high to go over those other trees. Right in front of the green, there's that big sand trap. Bob, what do you think I ought to use?
Ben Hogan.
Too light a club for me. I'm an ad-libbing fool. Let me see. Gee, I was in the same spot yesterday when I played with Stanley Curtis and George Howard. They're both watching the game. I thought I'd mention them. This tree wasn't directly in the way. I could... Hey, where'd that ball go?
You know where it went. You kicked it right out into the fairway.
Well, it was an accident.
Some accident. The first kick, you missed it.
Well, it was an accident. I'm going to shoot it from there.
Oh, no, you're not. The rules say that if you move a ball, it costs you a stroke, and you can't argue with me because I know the rules of golf.
You know, Bob, this is an amazing coincidence.
What's a coincidence?
It was exactly this time last year, right here on this course, that my ex-orchestra leader became my ex-orchestra leader because he, too, knew the rules of golf. Caddy, hand me my 3-wood. Thank you. Where to go? Where to go? Where to go?
Well, I don't know, but when we get to the green, just drop a ball in the hole. I've got a wife and 5 kids to support.
Oh, star, there it is. It's just on the green there.
Say, that was a swell shot, Jack. Now let's walk over to where I am.
Gee, these 2 days in Palm Springs are doing me a lot of good, Bob. You know, I'll feel great when we do our television show next Sunday.
Yeah, and with this tan I've got, I won't need a lot of makeup.
Yeah. Well, here's your ball, Bob. Your shot.
Well, all I need is just a little chip.
Nice shot, Bob. Right on the green. Come on. Well, we're both on the green in 2.
Yeah. You putt first, Jack. You're away.
Putt? Aren't you going to concede that?
Jack, you got an 8-foot putt there. Give me one good reason why I should concede it.
I'll give you a 6, your wife and 5 children.
Yes, folks, that's what Jack did Saturday. But now, this is Sunday, the day he does his radio broadcast. And in honor of our locale, today we're going to do a dramatic play based on the historical discovery of Palm Springs. Curtain, music. Ladies and gentlemen, although for centuries without number, the area around Palm Springs was known and loved by the Indians, it was not discovered by the white man till 1774. It was in this year that the Spaniards pushed through to the desert in California. But the Spaniards, hungry for gold, saw no value in this area and pushed on toward the coast. For nearly another century, Palm Springs remained a sleeping in the sun, a veritable paradise for the Indians of the Agua Caliente tribe.
This isn't funny, folks, but up till now, Don has had nothing. Continue, Donzie.
Then in the year 1853, 2 intrepid explorers headed west from Texas into the blistering, burning desert.
Sun is sure hot today, Tex.
Yep. This sand is burning my feet, Tex.
I think it's even hotter than it was yesterday, Tex.
I reckon you're right, Tex.
Well, let's push on, Tex.
Right behind you, Tex.
One of us should have come from Colorado. Tell you what, Tex, you can call me Slim.
Okay, Slim. And I think we're lost in this desert because... Hey, wait a minute. Look, there's a man coming towards us.
Oh, yes. Hello there.
Buenos dias, mister.
Now, look, amigo, we're lost. We've been wandering through this desert heat for days without water or food. Our skins are burned to a crisp and our feet worn raw. Maybe you can help us.
Se hable temprano días cajuile por tener tacos.
What does that mean?
Next time, take the train and relax.
Don't be stupid. There's not a train within 1,000 miles of here.
Yeah, do you live around here?
Oh, no, mister.
Then what are you doing out here in the desert anyway?
I'm looking for my sister, mister.
Your sister's lost, eh? When'd she disappear?
Last night was when I first missed her.
Your sister?
Yes, mister.
And you've been walking through the desert all day?
Yes, and on my foot I have a blister.
Well, that's too...
Mister.
Hey, that sis of yours, is she beautiful?
Yes, you couldn't resist her.
Well, maybe you can...
Mister.
I've had enough of this silly talk. Come on, Tex, let's go.
Hey, wait a minute, Slim. Here comes somebody else.
What are you hombres doing around my neck of the woods?
Out of my way, mister. We're trekking onward.
Oh, no, you ain't.
Oh, yes, we are.
Be careful, Slim. Be careful. That's Windy Wilson, the toughest man in these here parts.
Windy Wilson, eh? Well, I'll take care of that. Shot him right in the stomach. Yes, sir.
You got me. You got me. And now I'm a-dying. I'm a-heading for the big corral up yonder, where the deer and the antelope play on fleecy clouds, where there ain't no lost little dogies, and the chuck wagon is always filled. Yeah, I'm a-heading for that big heavenly roundup in the sky. Yes, I'm a-going.
Oh, shut up. You had enough to do.
I'm sorry.
Come on, Tex.
Wait a minute. Here come three guys on horseback.
Where? Where?
Oh, they will not hurt you, mister. They are my brothers, the Guadalajara Trio. They are singers.
The Guadalajara Trio. Who was that applauding?
I don't know. Dig this crazy desert.
Yeah, yeah. Sing something, boys.
Horacio. Piedad para el que llora.
Mexicano.
That was very good, senor. Now, come on, Tex. We got to go and discover Palm Springs. So long, amigo.
Adios, and if I do not see you till then, happy Easter.
Thanks.
Easter.
Yeah. Come on, Tex.
Oh, one moment, senor.
Now what?
I bet you were surprised to meet a Mexican who does not do that silly talk about Sai.
Sai?
Si.
Now, cut that! Come on, Tex. Time to discover Palm Springs. No doubt about it, Tex. We're lost.
Yeah, Slim. And you better go on without me. I can't make it. I'm too tired. I'm too thirsty. My throat is parched and...
Tex, what are you staring at?
Why, look up ahead. There's a pool of clear, cold water and a beautiful gal standing beside it. Let's go. You can have the water.
Tex, come back. It's only a mirage.
Hello, beautiful.
Hi, handsome.
Tex, come back. It's a mirage.
How about a kiss, sweetie?
Okay, cutie, come here.
Tex, stop kissing that mirage. Tex, you're acting crazy. I'll tell you, it's a mirage. Tex, stop.
Oh. What?
You were making a fool out of yourself. You were standing there kissing a mirage.
Are you sure?
Certainly. You had your arms around a cactus plant.
Cactus plant? What a fool I've been.
Yeah.
For the past 2 weeks, I've been walking right by them.
Now, look, Tex, get a grip on yourself. Here, take these last few drops of water out of my canteen. I don't think we have too far to go. We must be getting near Palm Springs now. We've been going through these vineyards for days.
Yeah, and look, here comes a cow.
Rochester was right. Tex, look. Look, here, we made it. This is Palm Springs. Read the sign on that building.
Welcome to Palm Springs. Try your luck at Cactus Pete's gambling joint and date shop.
Come on, let's go in.
Hiya, fellas. Come on right in.
Who are you?
I'm Tumbleweed Tess, the owner.
Oh, hello, Tess.
Wait a minute. Hey, Tess, didn't I see you in a mirage before?
No, that was my sister, Babe. She's a cactus plant.
See, Tex, I told you.
Would you boys like to try your luck gambling?
Well, sure. What do you got here?
Blackjack, poker, dice, and roulette.
I like to play a little roulette. Is it on the level?
Are you kidding? That wheel is so crooked we have to have the brakes relined twice a week.
Well, I'm going to play some roulette. Come on, let's go in.
All right, gentlemen, how about a little action around here? Pick your number and watch a wheel go round.
I'll put $5 on 28. That's always been my lucky number.
Okay, $5 on 28. You lose.
28's my lucky number. Another $5 on 28.
13, you lose.
I'll try it once more. $5 on 28. There it is, 28.
13, you lose.
Wait a minute. This game is crooked. And another thing, your face is familiar to me.
Haven't I seen you before?
Could be. In the last half hour, I was a gas station attendant, a Mexican, and a drunken cow.
I thought so. Come on, Tex. Let's get out of here. Ladies and gentlemen, the very best Easter gift of all is the support you give through Easter Seals to children who need your help. These seals provide medical care, nursery centers, and many other things that are needed. So give and give generously to the Easter Seal Agency in your community, or send your contributions to Crippled Children, care of your local post office. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes another show from Palm Springs. And, Bob, I want to tell you that it was a lot of fun playing golf with you while we were down here.
Well, thanks, Jack. But there's something that I wanted to ask you. You know, all the time we were playing, you carried a golf ball in your hand, and yet you never used it.
Well, Bob, I never used that ball.
Oh?
You see, it's a memento of my happiest memory in all the years that I've been playing golf.
Oh, you made a hole-in-one with it?
No. But 2 years ago at Hillcrest, someone drove that ball off the tee, hit me on the head. I sued and collected $2,000. Good night, folks.
The Jack Benny program is written by Sam Perrin, Milt Josephsburg, George Balzer, John Tackerberry, and produced and transcribed by Hilliard Marks. Be sure to hear The American Way with Horace Hite for Lucky Strike every Thursday over this same station. Consult your newspaper for the time.
Stay tuned for The Amos and Andy Show, which follows immediately on the CBS Radio Network.
And sometimes things can get rather silly, but one thing's for sure, Phil Mack will guide you through. And try to leave you feeling giddy. And try to leave you feeling happy. Thematic. Thematic. Heard on Wednesdays from 12 to 4. Thematic. Thematic.
Interview some classics and
so much more. Thematic. Thematic. Thematic.
Woo! Catch Thematic every Wednesday from 12 to 4 p.m.
Nerd.
If you're 19 or older with certain underlying medical conditions such as asthma or diabetes, you can get vaccinated against pneumococcal pneumonia, a potentially serious bacterial lung disease that can disrupt your life for weeks. If you're 65 or older, it is also recommended you get vaccinated against pneumococcal pneumonia, no matter the season. Talk to your doctor about vaccination today and learn more at lung.org/protect yourself. A message from the American Lung Association in collaboration with Pfizer.
Once again, welcome to Radio Vault. We just heard Jack Benny, two shows as a matter of fact, from 1953. March of that year, we heard The Snows of Kilimanjaro from March 8th. And How Palm Springs Was Founded from March 15, 1953. And up and coming next, since we're featuring all shows from consecutive years, March 22nd, 1953 was the year that Jack Benny took a walk through Palm Springs. But first, we need to remind you, you're listening to WHFR Dearborn, featuring local and independent artists, and listener-supported on your radio dial. Let's do it now, March 23rd, 1953.
The Jack Benny Program. Starring Jack Benny with Barry Livingston, Rochester, Dennis Day, Bob Cross.
Crosby and yours truly, Don Wilson. Ladies and gentlemen, immediately after this radio program, Jack does his television show. But meanwhile, let's go out to Jack Benny's house in Beverly Hills. It's morning, and he's just finished his breakfast.
Did you enjoy your breakfast, Mr. Benny?
Oh, yes, it was wonderful. You know, Rochester, I like starting off with that pink grapefruit. Where do those pink grapefruits come from?
Florida.
Florida, eh? I wonder what makes them pink.
When they see the size of our California grapefruit, they blush.
Oh, Rochester, you're cute. That was a swell breakfast.
Say, Mr. Benny, you've got a little bit of egg on your chin.
I have? Hand me a spoon.
Oh, boss, wipe it off. It's not enough to save.
I'm not going to save it. I just didn't want to dirty a napkin. You know, our Bendix machines are loaded here. Oh, hello, Polly. I said, hello, Polly. Rochester, why does Polly seem afraid of me?
Well, you know how you force it.
Well, she needn't worry. This year we're going to buy the eggs. Hello, Polly.
Ow.
That's better. Rochester, such a beautiful day, I think I'll go for a walk.
You've been taking a lot of walks lately, Mr. Benny.
I know. You see, when I left the hospital and went to Palm Springs, the doctor told me I was fine, but I ought to get a little more exercise.
How would you like to mow the lawn?
No, I'll walk. Don't be so good to me, you know. I'll see you later. Gee, it's certainly nice out today. Everything looks so beautiful. The air smells so fresh. I feel great since I got out of the hospital. A person doesn't realize the tremendous advances medical science has made. All those new wonder drugs they've invented. Oramycin, chloramycetin, cortisone, penicillin, and the four-way cold tablet. Now they've even got a 12-way cold tablet. That's for people who get sick watching three-dimensional pictures. That stay in the hospital sure did me a lot of good. No business, no phone calls. Just wonderful rest and quiet. Doctors wanted me to stay in the hospital a little longer, but I insisted on getting out. $20 a day. Fortunately, I was getting $25 from the Blue Cross. I think next week I'll tell them I'm out. Hey, there's that cute little Washburn girl playing with her doll. Hello, Beverly.
Oh, hello, Mr. Benny. It's nice to see you out of the hospital.
Oh, thank you, Beverly.
What did you have, a boy or a girl?
No, honey. I had the flu.
Gee, I didn't know there were boys, girls, and flus.
No, Beverly, you're mixed up. You see, the flu is like a cold.
Well, didn't you bring anything from home to the hospital?
No.
Then they cheated you. Every time my mommy goes, she brings home a baby.
She does?
Yeah. She's such a good customer. Last time they gave her two.
I
I know, you're twin brothers. Well, see you later, Beverly. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Mr. Benny.
Gee, she's cute. Thinking that I had a baby. Imagine me having a baby. That would drive my press agent nuts. That little Beverly is a doll. Her parents named her Beverly because she was born here in Beverly Hills. Her brother's name is Pismo. Oh, boy, this walk is sure making me feel good. I wonder if... Oh, hello, Dennis.
Sure, and be gone at top of the morning. To the pleasure equal to kissing the Blarney Stone itself, running into the likes of you and maybe wishing you a happy St. Patrick's Day there.
Wait a minute, Dennis. Aren't you celebrating St. Patrick's Day a little late?
Oh, I forgot about it.
Dennis, how could you possibly forget? Everybody was wearing green shirts and green ties and green socks, and the women were wearing green dresses and green hats.
I thought it was a publicity stunt for chlorophyll.
Oh, by the way, Dennis, I'm a little disappointed in you. You didn't come to visit me when I was in the hospital.
Well, I couldn't, Mr. Benny. I was sick at the time myself.
You were? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I had to have a doctor and everything. I felt awful. I had chills and fever and temperature and butterflies in my stomach.
No kidding. What did the doctor do?
He told me to stop eating the butterflies.
Dennis, come here a minute.
If you hit me, I'll tell the Blue Cross you're out of the hospital.
Well, goodbye, Dennis. I'll see you later.
Oh, wait a minute, Mr. Benny. Don't you want to listen to the song I'm going to do on the show next week?
Listen to it here? Here on the street? It'd be embarrassing.
Yeah, I guess you're right, Mr. Benny. The last time I sang on the street, people started throwing money out of the windows.
Sing, kid. I'll get it ruined.
The day and the night.
How'd you like my song, Mr. Benny?
Just a minute, Dennis. 65, 70. 75, 80. No, that's a bottle cap. That's the one that landed right on my nose.
They're right. Pepsi-Cola hits the spot.
Yeah. Well, so long, Dennis.
Goodbye.
That was a nice song that Dennis sang. Probably be a big hit. I never could understand why the song I wrote wasn't a hit. When you say I beg your pardon, then I'll come back to you. When you ask me to forgive you, I'll return. Like the swallows at Serrano, come back to... Say, now I know what's wrong with my song. It stinks. Well, someday I'll write a big hit that will...
Can you tell me how to get to the farmer's market?
Yes, you turn right... Hey, aren't you my friend from Calabasas?
Yes, sir. Hi, Rube.
Hi. The farmer's market's on the corner of 3rd and Fairfax. You coming to town to buy something?
No, I'm taking this truckload of stuff from a farm to sell.
Oh. What do you got in the truck?
Pig's knuckles.
Pig's knuckles?
Yeah, the pigs were driving me crazy, always cracking them.
Oh, you're kidding.
No, I'm not. Quiet, Pokey. Well, I better get going, Rube. I'm in a hurry.
Why, what's the rush?
I want to get home before 8 o'clock. This is going to be a big night in Calabasas. They're reopening the movie house. They put in a new modern feature.
Oh, you mean three-dimensional pictures?
No, talkies.
Well, I hope you enjoy them.
Oh, I will. Can't wait to hear that Valentino fella talk. He's a hot one.
Yeah. Well, goodbye.
So long, Rube. I'm the Sheik of Arabi.
Gosh, there's a real friendly person. Great fan of mine, too. He's waving goodbye to me. Oh, no, it's one of the pig's knuckles. But a fan is a fan. Gee, I had no idea I walked this far. Here's Don Wilson's house. I wonder if Don is home. Must be. The house is tilted. I'll drop in and surprise him.
Why, Jack Benny, what a pleasant surprise.
Oh, hello, Mrs. Wilson. I was just out for a stroll and thought I'd drop in. Don's home, isn't he?
Yes. Come right in.
Thank you.
Well, you look wonderful, Jack. How are you feeling now?
Oh, great. You know, I had a nice rest in Palm Springs. Where's Don?
He's in the living room practicing his diction.
Practicing his diction?
Yes. You know, an announcer has to practice every day, just like a musician.
I never knew that.
I'll call him. Oh, Don. Donald. Honey. Sweetheart. Fatso.
Are you sure he's in the living room?
Oh, yes. He gets so absorbed when he practices his diction. Let's go in.
Oh, now, brown cow. The rain in Spain falls mainly on the plain. Oh, now, brown cow. Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers. She sells seashells by the seashore.
Oh, Don.
How now, brown cow?
Donald.
Oh,
I'm sorry, dear. I was rehearsing. Oh, hello, Jack.
Oh, hello, Don. Don't let me interrupt. Go right ahead with you. Hey, I didn't know the Sportsman Quartet was here with you. Hello, fellas. Don, what are you and the Sportsman working on?
Ah, we've all been practicing our diction.
The Sportsman, too?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, we have a wonderful song prepared for the show. Would you like to hear it?
Why, sure, as long as I'm here.
All right, fellas, take it.
How now, brown cow? How now, brown cow?
Okay, take it now.
You got an accent. You ain't the positive E limb. But ain't the negative a latch on to the affirmative. Don't mess with Mr. In Between. You got E, none, C, A, clarity. Use words with familiarity and add to your popularity. Don't mess with Mr. In Between.
To illustrate our last remark, Jonah in the whale, Noah in the ark. What did they say just when everything looked so dark?
Pass the dictionary.
Accent. You ate the positive, eliminate the negative, and latch on to the affirmative. Don't mess with Mr. In Between. No, don't mess with Mr. In Between. How now, brown cow? How now, brown cow? No, don't mess with Mr. In Between. How now, brown cow? How now, brown cow?
Wonderful, Don. It'll be swell on the show.
I knew you'd like it.
Well, I gotta be going. I'm taking my daily walk.
Oh, but Jack, it was such a short visit. Why don't you stay and have lunch with Don? I'm sure there'll be enough for both of you.
No, thanks. I'm not hungry.
Good, good.
Well, goodbye, Mrs. Wilson.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Jack.
Goodbye, brown cow. See you later. Gosh, I walked all the way down to the shopping district. Drucker's Barbershop. Haircuts $1.50. How do you like that? They raised the price. Last time I got one, they were 40 cents. Say, what smells so good? Oh, it's this bakery here. Oh, boy, look at those nice-looking cakes in the window. I think I'll go in and buy something.
Yes, sir, what can I do for you?
Well, I don't know. Everything looks so good here. What do you recommend?
Well, we got pies, cakes, donuts, brownies, and Cimarron rolls.
What?
Cimarron rolls.
Don't you mean cinnamon?
That's what I said, cinnamon roll.
Well, I don't want any of those. Oh, I know. Have you got any lady fingers?
I used to have, but I had to get rid of them. They kept cracking their knuckles.
Well, don't be so smart. I came in here to buy something. Now, let's see. Well, I know. I'll have a half a dozen donuts, that chocolate cake, and let's see. I'll have this Napoleon.
That's a Josephine.
Well, mister, I've been having those for years. It's a Napoleon.
It's a Josephine. This is Danish pastry.
Anyway, and say, on second thought, I think I'll have some of those Cimarron rolls.
What?
I said I'll... I said I'll have some of those Cimarron rolls.
Don't you mean cinnamon rolls?
Yes, give me six of them.
Now, how much is it altogether?
Now, let's see. Donuts, chocolate, pastry, and a half a dozen Cimarron rolls. That comes to a dollar even.
A dollar? Well, here you are. Goodbye.
Goodbye, and call again. You're quite a character.
All right. Goodbye. Hey, Rochester will be happy I stopped at the bakery. He loves donuts. I'll put a candle on one of them. Tomorrow's his birthday. Gee, look at all the new sets in this television store window. Hey, they're advertising my TV show that goes on today. It says, don't miss Jack Benny's version of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Oh, boy, I love those shows where I can play two parts.
Hi, Jack. What are you doing here?
Huh? Oh, Bob Crosby. I was just looking at these television sets. Where are you going, Bob?
Oh, nowhere. Just coming from Remley's house. You see, Frankie's sick in bed with the flu.
Gosh, everybody seems to have had it. Is Remley taking good care of himself?
Oh, yes. Starts out in the morning with a hot toddy. 9 o'clock, he has grapefruit juice and bourbon. 10 o'clock, he has orange juice and vodka. Mm-hmm. And at noon, he has lime and gin. He keeps repeating this until bedtime.
Well, for heaven's sake, who's his doctor?
Oh, he hasn't got a doctor. He's got a bartender.
Well, of all the... Why doesn't he get a doctor?
What? And get well?
What a guy. Well, I gotta be running along, Bob. Don't forget my television show this afternoon. Well,
don't worry, Jack. I'll be watching it.
Watching it? You're on it.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Well, see you later.
So long. Oh, Bob.
Yes?
You know... I got something funny to tell you. You know that word that you always have so much trouble pronouncing...
Manischewitz?
Yeah. Well, I just ran into a fellow in a bakery who couldn't pronounce cinnamon rolls.
Well, how do you like that? You mean he couldn't say Cimarron rolls?
Yeah. So long, Bob. So long. Imagine Bob almost forgetting my TV show. Gee, I can't wait till I get on and do Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. The part I like is when I change from the nice, kind-hearted Dr. Jekyll into the mean, cruel Mr. Hyde. Boy, that really takes acting. Oh, my goodness. People are looking at me. I'm so embarrassed. Thank you. Gee, look what time it is. I better get down to the TV studio.
Extra, get your paper here. Latest election returns.
Election return?
Extra, Herbert Hoover elected president of the United States. Hoover defeats Alfred E. Smith. Extra. Herbert Hoover, new president. Extra.
That's what I get for transcribing my show so far in advance. Oh, well, I better hurry. Good night, folks.
Jack Benny is a regular feature of the United States Armed Forces Radio Service.
Tune in Thursdays from 8 to 11 p.m. to hear The Jump Button. I'm your host, Rob with Two B's. On The Jump Button, you will hear music from and about video games, soundtracks, animation, and more. It's your weekly pop culture playlist and all the super dorky radio you can handle every Thursday from 8 to 11 p.m., heard only here on WHFR.FM.
To some, the sound of a baby babbling doesn't mean much, but that's not true. They're testing out vowels and consonants and trying different sounds. And by 12 months, their babbling is beginning to take on meaning. Especially if there's no babbling at all. Little to no babbling by 12 months or later is just one of the possible signs of autism in children. Learn more at AutismSpeaks.org. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
The Jack Benny Program. With Mary Livingston, Rochester, Dennis Day, Bob Crosby, and yours truly, Don Wilson. Ladies and gentlemen, last Sunday on his television show, Jack Benny acted both roles in that famous classic, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, which was written by Robert Louis Stevenson.
That's right.
Stevenson took a beating.
Wait a minute.
And here's the star of our show, Jack Benny.
Thank you. Thank you, thank you. Hello again, this is Jack Benny talking, and Don, 33-dimensional. Don, I want to ask you something about that introduction. Did you write that joke yourself?
Well, I don't want to take all the credit. My wife helped me write that one.
Oh, your wife. Your wife helped you, eh? Don, she's an actress, isn't she?
Jack, you know very well that my wife is an actress. You've had her on your program many times. In fact, she was on just last week.
That's right. Don, isn't it a shame that both of you are going to be out of work at the same time? I'm sorry you have no children. I'd enjoy firing them, too.
Now, wait a minute, Jack. You can't fire me after all the years I've been with you. I started as your announcer in 1934, and during all these 19 years, I've given you loyalty and devotion.
Some loyalty and devotion. Every time I cut your salary, you tell everybody. Anyway, Don.
If you ever cut my salary, my mother would slap your silly face.
Dennis, in the first place, I wasn't talking to you. And in the second place, it's about time you showed up. How come you missed rehearsal today?
I had a tooth pulled.
Oh. Oh, well, then I'm sorry. Was the tooth giving you a lot of pain, Dennis?
No.
Oh. Did it have a cavity?
No.
Then why in the world did you have your tooth pulled?
Because the dentist owed me $10, and that was the only way I could collect.
Look, kid, you let the dentist pull your tooth because he owed you $10?
Yeah, I wish he owed me $11, then I could have had Novocaine.
Well, I don't want to go into that anymore. I don't care whether Remley laughs or not. I don't want to go into it. Now, Dennis, look, I don't mind so much you're missing rehearsal, but the least you could have done is let me know.
Well, I did. I called your house yesterday, and I told Rochester I couldn't be there.
Oh, you did, eh? Well, I'm going to call Rochester and find out.
Say, Mabel, what is a geistrin?
Mr. Benny's line is flashing.
Yeah, I wonder what the bat in the pocketful wants now.
I'll plug in and find out. Hello? Yes, Mr. Benny. Very well, I'll see if I can get him for you. He wants I should ring his house and get him Rochester.
Gee, Geitrude, you sound awfully formal when you were speaking to Jack.
Did you two have a fight?
No. In fact, just the other night, he took me to a preview. We saw Rita Hayworth and Salome. It was an exciting picture, especially when Rita did the dance of the seven veils.
Gosh, did she take off all seven?
No, she stopped when she took off number six. But Jack will never know.
Why not?
He fainted at number five.
Are you kidding? Jack really fainted?
Yeah. He closed those baby blue eyes and slid right off the seat.
Well, what do you know? Look, you've been seeing a lot of him lately, haven't you?
Yeah. I've been seeing Jack so often I had to turn down a date with Dennis Day last week. But look who's talking. Jeannie with the light brown teeth.
Gertrude.
What? Are you sure there's no answer? Well, keep trying the number. Goodbye.
What's the matter, Jack?
Rochester isn't home. But I'm going to call him again. And Dennis, for your sake, I hope you were telling me the truth. Now it's time for your song, so let's have it.
Yes, sir.
Oh, hold it, kid. Come in.
Telegram for Jack Benny.
I'm Jack Benny.
Well, here you are.
I'll be darned, it's from Fred Allen.
Fred Allen? What does he say?
Dear Jack, I have just been informed that I am to appear on your television show. That's what I get for telling my agent to get me anything. Now, come on, Dennis, let's get on with it. Boy, what are you hanging around here for?
Well, sir, I don't mean to appear impudent or presumptuous, but when someone delivers a telegram, it is customary for the recipient to show his appreciation with a gratuity.
Okay. Here.
Oh, boy, a Canadian dime. Now I can summer at Lake Louise.
Dennis, let's have your song. Singing pretend. Very good, Dennis. It was excellent. And now, kids, we have a very important play to do tonight. Hey, where's Bob Crosby?
Well, here I am.
Bob, I just happened to think of something. You missed rehearsal, too. What's your excuse?
Well, I had to go down to buy a little gift for Sammy's new baby.
Sammy, the drummer's wife, had a baby?
Mm-hmm.
Gee, I didn't know that. Hey, remind me to send something, too.
Okay. No, it's wonderful the way the presents have been rolling in. All the musicians sent gifts. Gosh, Bagby sent a little blanket. Wayne Songer sent a cute little dress. Remley sent a sweater that he knitted. And Kimmick sent the nicest...
Hold it a second, Bob. Hold it. You said Remley sent a sweater he knitted?
Yeah.
I didn't know Remley could knit.
Jack, when you got the shakes like Frankie has, you can do wonders with knitting needles.
Well, I guess so.
After six martinis, he's an Argyle man.
That figures. Now, kids, it's getting late, and I think we ought to start on the sketch we're going to do. Huh?
What about the sketch, Mr. Benny?
Well, it's based on that wonderful Universal International picture, Mississippi Gambler, starring Tyrone Power. I, of course, will play Tyrone Power's part.
Wait a minute, Jack. Do you think you're the type?
Well...
He certainly is. He's young, handsome, and romantic, just like Tyrone Power.
Oh, thanks, Dennis. You're loyal and devoted.
I'm nuts, too.
Now, cut that out! Now, Don, set the scene. Hold it a minute, hold it. Hello?
Hello, Mr. Benny, this is Rochester.
Rochester, I called you before and you were out.
I had to go down to the market to do some shopping for the house.
Oh, what'd you get?
I got a half pound of hamburger, a can of peas, a can of beans, and a bale of alfalfa.
Why in the world would you buy a bale of alfalfa?
The price of milk went up 2 cents, and I know what you're going to do about that.
I am not. They don't let you keep them in Beverly Hills. Pasadena, maybe, but not Beverly Hills. Now, Rochester, the reason I called is because Dennis Day said he phoned yesterday and told you he'd have to miss rehearsal.
Oh, yes, boss, I forgot to tell you.
Oh, you did, eh? Well, were there any calls today?
Yes, sir, I have them right here. Let's see. The income tax department called.
Income tax? What do they want? What do they want?
Oh, it didn't concern you, boss. It was about the income I reported.
Well, what was wrong with it?
Nothing. They just called to offer their sympathy.
Well, that's your problem. Were there any other calls?
Oh, yes. Miss Barbara Stanwyck called. She's giving a big party tomorrow night, and she wants you to be there.
Oh, good, good. Black tie or white tie?
White coat. You'll be parking cars.
Oh, well, Rochester, put some new batteries in my flashlight. Goodbye, Rochester.
Goodbye!
All right, Don. Now, Don, you can set the scene for our sketch.
Okay. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the Playhouse presents its version of Mississippi Gambler. Curtain. Music. In the middle of the 19th century, the main artery of commerce and transportation between the North and the South was the Mississippi. Riverboats used to paddle their way up and down in a never-ending stream. Aboard these ships was cargo and passengers. And a special breed of these passengers was the Mississippi Gambler.
Mississippi gambler, and I've been going up and down this river all my life. The first 20 years were tough. Then I got on a boat. I don't remember much of my father, but my mother was a kindly woman, and she always tried to teach me right from wrong. I remember when I was 2 years old, she sat me on her lap and said,
"Look, son, you're very young, but try to remember this.
Never draw to an inside straight.
Ours was a wonderful relationship. When I was 18, Mother and I parted. I went to New Orleans, and she went to Tehachapi. One day, my best friend, Robert Stonewall Crosby, and I found ourselves in St. Paul, and we boarded a riverboat back to New Orleans.
Do you think we'll make any money this trip, Tyrone?
Sure, there are plenty of suckers aboard. But, Bob, I don't know whether you're ready to be a professional gambler yet.
Well, why not?
Well, you don't keep a good poker face.
Well, what makes you say that?
Because I've watched you. When you fill a full house, you're supposed to sit there with a vacant expression. Not jump up on your chair and sing two choruses of Oh Happy Day. Wait a minute. Here comes a couple of guys that look ripe for picking. Let me do the talking. Would you gentlemen care to while away the time in a friendly game of cards?
Well, I don't mind if I do. I got $1,000 I can spare.
And I got a Canadian dime.
You got your tip. Get out of here. Now, come on. We'll play some three-handed poker.
Well, suits me. Here's the table.
I'll deal.
I'll open for $50.
I'll see that and raise it $100.
I'll see your raise and raise it another $100.
That's too much for me. I'm out.
Well, I'll call. Give me two cards.
I'll take one.
I'll bet $100.
I'll raise $200.
Well, I'll just call. What do you got?
Four aces.
Beats me. I got three aces.
That's why I dropped out. I only had two. Say, wait a minute, stranger. You dealt those nine aces, and I think you're cheating.
No man can say that to me, sir. Do you know what it means when someone slaps your face with his glove?
It means a challenge to a duel.
That's right, so take that.
I accept your challenge.
However, duels were small incidents on the river, and our boat pushed southwards. Our ride took us down past Wisconsin, Iowa, Illinois, and then Missouri. Oh, that isn't who you think, folks. Yes, there was always plenty of melody and music along the river. Some nights as we sailed close to the shore, we could hear voices harmonizing on the levees. record continued. Every night I played poker, and I always won. But one night, the captain caught me cheating. And as punishment, he tied a rope around me and kept dipping me in and out of the river. He thought it was a treat to beat my feet on the Mississippi mud. Shortly after this incident, that I met her. I remember when we were first introduced, she said,
"I am awfully glad to meet you, monsieur. And I hope you and I can become good friends. Very good friends."
Her name was Yvette. And she had come aboard that morning at Albuquerque. Now, I know that Albuquerque is far from the Mississippi. But for her, somehow the boat made it. I told her that I, too, hoped we would become good friends. And she said,
"You are very kind, monsieur."
She was a plain gal. Slim, frail, and immature. This description was written before the part was cast. We fell in love, but because her brother hated gamblers, we had to meet each other secretly. One morning after we landed at New Orleans, she was supposed to meet me at the place where I lived, the Old Man River Hotel. It was called the Old Man River Hotel because when you stayed there, you were tired of living and feared of dying. While waiting for her, I thought I'd have some breakfast and call room service. Soon the waiter was knocking at my door.
"Come in."
Did you call for room service?
"Yes, I want some breakfast. Orange juice, coffee, and let's see, what can I have with the coffee?"
"Well, we have toast, English muffins, donuts, and cimarron rolls."
"What?"
"Cimarron rolls."
"Look, waiter, bring me some orange juice, coffee, and a cimarron roll."
"Okay, and you're lucky. Yesterday, I couldn't have brought you any cimarron rolls."
"Why not?"
"We were out of cinnamon."
"All right, just go get it."
He brought me my breakfast, and I finished it. And then Yvette arrived. She looked so beautiful standing there in her new knitted dress. I could tell it was newly knitted, because a drunken guitar player was still working on it.
"Now, darling, you're here.
Oh, yes, Jerome. I'm sorry to be late, but I
don't
had...
Don't talk. Just come into my arms. Now, let me kiss you."
Oh, your kiss. It is so wonderful. It tastes of cimarron.
Cimarron?
That's French for cinnamon.
Oh, then I must apologize to the waiter. Who can that be?
Oh, it must be my brother. He followed me here.
Hey, wait a minute.
"Ah, monsieur, at last I have found you. You pig, you dog, you snake, I break you in two."
"Oh, Denis, my brother, listen to me. Oh, j'aime cet homme, il aime moi. Et quoi qu'il est un joueur comme du fleuve, et nous sommes de les aristocraties, je lui marierai sans égard pour qu'elle te dit."
"What did she say?"
"I do not know, but dig that crazy language."
"Now look.
Monsieur, my sister will not marry your gambler. I challenge you to a duel."
"What?"
"I slap your face with my glove."
"You're supposed to take your hand out of it first." "But if you want a duel, draw your sword."
"En garde."
He was so young, so inexperienced. But as the duel progressed, the minutes wore on and on, to till we are for an hour. Still we fought on with unabated fury, and another hour passed. And another hour. Then suddenly it was over. He didn't hurt me, and I didn't harm him. But my two sound men killed each other. That is my story. The Adventures of a Mississippi Gambler.
Next week to the Jack Benny Show. Don Wilson speaking. This is the United States Armed Forces Radio Service.
Light from the Underground is a radio show filled with musical surprises. You'll get a chance to hear new music, often artists you aren't familiar with, and we might even mix in some classics that you haven't thought of in years. I'm Bill Keith, and I enjoy digging through all the music we've received to spotlight the best music I can find. I focus on singer-songwriters across a wide variety of genres. Add in some blues or Americana, maybe a bit of gospel music, and some indie rock to mix things up. And you have Light from the Underground. Thanks to Henry Ford College for making WUHFR possible. Their investment allows us to create radio that's focused on Dearborn and the greater Detroit area. And thank you for being a loyal listener. Check out Light from the Underground Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. on 89.3 WUHFR.FM. We're making waves.
Considering a career as a social worker, mental health technician, or counselor? If so, check out the Social Work and Counseling Technician program at Henry Ford College. You can earn your associate in applied science degree through HFC's School of Health and Human Services. For more information, contact our Learning Success Center at 313-845-9750. That's 313-845-9750.
All right, this is Radio Vault. We just heard the Mississippi Gambler episode from March 29 of 53. Ahead of that, a walk. Thank you. A walk through Beverly Hills from March 22nd of 53. We have Waiting in the Wings. The Lux Radio Theater from 1947. The Ghost and Mrs. Muir. It'll be a fun show.
So I'm gonna walk up to his gate.
That's next for our final hour of today's Radio Vault.
And so I'm gonna have him. I'm gonna tell him, is you is or is you ain't my baby. And lately makes me doubt. You is still my baby, baby. But it seems my flame in your heart's done gone out. A man is a
creature that has always been strange. Just when you think you're sure of one, you'll find he's gone and made a change. If you is or is, you ain't my baby. Or maybe my baby's found somebody new. Or is my baby still my baby true?
Considering a career as a social worker, mental health.
Get out those old records, those old phonograph records, the ones we used to play so long ago. What if they sound scratchy? The tunes really were catchy, and especially those that said, I love you so. I used to beg you over and over just to set the wedding day. To get you courtable, I'd bring my portable and melt your heart away. With all those old records, those old phonograph records, the ones we used to play so long ago.
All the ones about
records, those old,
all the ones about you,
records, the ones Kitten we used to play so long ago,
and the old wind-up Victrola, Barney Google was
scratchy,
great,
the tunes,
all the songs
really
about Kate,
and especially
Jada,
those that said I love you so,
Yuckahoola, Hickey,
I used to beg you over and over, just to set the wedding day. To get you portable, I'd bring my portable
songs
and melt your heart away. With all those old,
they were wonderful records.
Those old,
play them over again.
Records, the ones we used to play so long ago. The ones we used to play so long ago.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn, listener-supported, non-commercial radio, featuring local and independent artists.
Lux presents Hollywood. Lieber Brothers Company, the makers of Lux Flakes, bring you the Lux Radio Theater, starring Charles Boyer and Madeline Carroll in The Ghost and Mrs. Muir. Ladies and gentlemen, your producer, Mr. William Keeley.
Greetings from Hollywood, ladies and gentlemen. In the December Reader's Digest, you may have been interested to read, as I was, of the current revival of ghosts in England. Unlike most Americans, the English tend not only to believe in ghosts, but to cherish them as an indispensable part of British life. Tonight, we ourselves present a very fascinating spirit in 20th Century Fox's screen success, The Ghost and Mrs. Muir. Our stars in this unusual romantic drama are Charles Boyer and lovely Madeline Carroll. Madeline making her first Hollywood appearance since her distinguished record overseas. While people say that seeing is believing, I'm not quite sure that that applies to ghosts. Truly, you generally can't see them, but you can often trace the results they have on people's lives, as in our play tonight. On to the first act of The Ghost and Mrs. Muir, starring Charles Boyer as Captain Gregg and Madeline Carroll as Lucy Muir. Some 50 years ago in London, a young and handsome widow, Lucy Muir, left the home of the mother and sister of her departed husband and boarded a train. With her went her small daughter, Anna, and a servant named Martha.
There, the little one's asleep now, Mum. Maybe now you can tell me where we're going.
You've been very patient with me, Martha.
I suppose we're running away. I can't say I blame you, Mum. Nagging at you morning till night, telling you what you could do and what you couldn't do. Sinful it was, Mum.
That will be enough, Martha.
Yes, Mum.
We're going to a village called Whitecliff. Whitecliff by the sea.
You've taken a house there, Mum?
I've been in touch with a leasing agent, a Mr. Coombs. He has several houses for rent. There must be one we can afford. At least we'll be by ourselves.
Well, good for you, Mum. Good for you.
We should be there soon. We'll stay at the inn till Mr. Coombs finds the house we want.
Yes, Mum.
Oh, Martha, I know I'm doing right. I know.
Say, Mrs. Muir, that you'll find no better home in Whitecliff than Laburnum Mount. It's newly built, it's near the village,
but
and
I can't understand why you won't show me Gull Cottage. The description in your file is most intriguing.
Oh, believe me, madam, Gull Cottage wouldn't suit you at all.
I suppose there's something wrong with it. Is it the drains?
Well, I put up a house for rent, Mrs. Muir. You may be sure there's nothing wrong with the drains.
Then why shouldn't it suit me?
Oh, will you kindly allow me to be the judge of that? Now about
but
this...
But if I'm going to live in the house, I should be the judge, Mr. Coombs. I'm sure there's another agency in Whitecliff. Perhaps they have Gull Cottage listed also.
Very well, Mrs. Muir. Come, I'll show you Gull Cottage. Well, you wanted to see Gull Cottage, and I've shown you Gull Cottage. Now we can leave
it. But it's lovely, and so close to the ocean.
And so far from a neighbour.
I can't understand it. Why should a house like this remain empty?
Well, it's been without a tenant for 4 years.
Of course, it's terribly dusty, but...
Mrs. Muir!
Who's that in there? There in... Oh, it's a portrait. A portrait on the wall.
Oh, that. Yes, the former owner, Captain Gregg.
The room's so dark, for a moment I thought it was someone real. Well, a sea captain. That explains the scheme of decoration, doesn't it?
Which is all in frightful taste.
Oh, it's a delightful room.
Mrs. Muir, I assure you this house will not suit you at all.
Nevertheless, I shall go upstairs.
But there are only 3 rooms upstairs. They're all bedrooms. The main bedroom, which is quite ugly, it's drafty, it's full of... Oh, well, see for yourself, then.
Why, it's charming. And a balcony. A balcony overlooking the sea. But what's this? A telescope.
Captain Gregg, madam. He liked to watch the passing ships.
As I shall too, Mr. Coombs. I suppose you have a reason for disliking this place so intensely. But I could become very fond of it. So, Mr. Coombs.
Maybe now you know my reason. Well, you would come. I didn't want to show it to you, but oh no, you had to see it.
Haunted. How perfectly fascinating.
Well, 8 times I've rented it, and 8 times the tenants have left after the very first night.
What a pity, Mr. Coombs. That laughter, that was Captain Gray.
It was indeed.
But why does he haunt? Was he murdered?
He committed suicide.
I wonder why. Mr. Coombs, I've decided to take Gull Cottage.
You what?
It's so ridiculous. Ghosts, apparitions.
Madam, with your own ears. But you heard him yourself.
The wind in the chimney, Mr. Coombs. Please arrange for us to move in tomorrow.
What time is it, Mama?
Way past sleepy time, Anna darling. No more stories tonight. Now off to sleep with you.
I love it here, Mama. Our own house and our own ocean. Even the rain sounds different than the rain in London.
That's because we're so close to the sea, darling. You're not afraid of the storm, are you?
Why should I be afraid?
Of course. We are snug and warm in our own little harbor. Good night, darling.
All tucked in, is she, Mum?
She'll be asleep in 2 minutes.
Me too, Mum. Oh, your hot water bottle's downstairs, Mum, on the kitchen table. And the kettle's on the stove.
Thank you, Martha.
My, it's storming out there for fair, ain't it? I don't mind saying it's a bit scary-like.
Martha.
A strange house and all, and not a soul in a mile of us.
Ooh. Oh, go to sleep, silly. I'll be up in a minute. Strange. Why should Martha turn out the kitchen light?
You've got it, Kendall. Light it.
What nonsense is this now? Now I'm hearing voices like Mr. Coombs. What's the matter with these matches? It's not the matches, it's... Very well, Captain Gregg. I know you're here. Are you afraid to speak up? Is that all you're good for, to frighten women? Well, I'm not afraid of you.
Light the candle, light it.
Well, how can I when you keep blowing out the matches?
Light the blasted candle!
Ah, that's better. Well?
You are Captain Gregg.
Who the devil else would I be?
I'm sorry I called you a coward. I didn't mean to embarrass you.
Embarrass me?
I mean, because of the way you died.
What? The way I died, madam?
Committing suicide.
Who the devil said I committed suicide?
Mr. Coombs said you
Coombs
did.
Is a fool. I went to sleep in front of that confounded gas heater in my bedroom. I'm a restless sleeper. I kicked the gas on with my foot. It was a stormy night, like this. So I shut my windows, as any sensible man would. Well, wouldn't you?
Yes, yes, I suppose so.
Well, the coroner's jury said it was suicide, because my blasted charwoman testified I'd always slept with my windows open. How the devil should she know how I slept?
Oh, I'm so glad.
You have a strange sense of humor, madam.
I mean, because you didn't commit suicide. But if you didn't, why do you haunt?
Because I have plans for my house, which do not include a pack of strangers making themselves at home.
I think it's very childish of you, frightening people.
Well, in your case, I'll admit, I charted the course with regret. You're not a bad-looking woman, you know, especially when you're asleep.
So you were in my room this afternoon while I was napping?
My room, madam.
And I thought I dreamed it all. But I knew I'd closed the window, and when I awoke, I found it open.
I opened the window because I didn't want another accident with a blasted gas.
I'm quite capable of taking care of myself.
Good. And you will pack your gear and shove off tomorrow, preferably the first thing in the morning.
I will not go. The house suits me perfectly.
It's my house, madam. And I intend to turn it into a home for retired seamen.
Then you should have said so in your will.
I didn't leave a will.
Why not?
Because I did not expect to kick the blasted gas on with my blasted foot.
I won't be shouted at. For 1 year I've been shouted at and ordered about, and I'm sick of it, you hear? Blast, blast, blast.
Temper.
Or laugh, Dad, either. I won't leave this house. I won't.
No, believe that. Stop that blasted blubbering, madame, or...
I love this house. I can't explain it. It was as if the house itself were welcoming me, asking me to rescue it from being so empty. You can't understand that, can you? All right, then I'm a silly woman, but that's the way I feel.
So, you love the house, well, I'll admit, that's a point. And you did not frighten like the others, that's a point, too. All right, you may stay here, madam, but on trial.
Oh, thank you, Captain Graham.
No, keep your distance, woman.
I'm sorry. You made me so happy.
No intention of making you happy. I merely want to do what's best for the house.
Then you'll go away and leave us alone?
I will not go away. Why should I?
Oh, because of my child. I don't want her frightened into fits.
But I never frighten children into fits.
But think of the bad language she'd learn.
Oh, confound it, madam. My language is most controlled.
Well, Anna is much too young to see ghosts.
Oh, very well. I'll make a bargain with you. Leave my bedroom as it is, and I'll promise not to go in any other room in the house. Then your brat and your servant need never know anything about me.
But if you keep the best bedroom, where should I sleep?
In the best bedroom.
But...
Oh, in heaven's name, madam. I am a spirit. I have no body. I haven't had one in 4 years. Is that clear?
But I can see you.
No. All you see is an illusion, like a blasted lantern slide.
Well, it's not very convincing, but I suppose it's all right.
I always was a fool for a helpless woman.
I am not helpless.
Well, if you're so confoundedly competent, you'll notice that your kettle is about to boil over.
Oh, so it is. Thank you.
One thing more. There is a portrait of me in the living room. I want it removed to the bedroom.
Must I? It's a very poor painting.
It's my painting. I did not invite your criticism.
Well, I only meant it doesn't do you justice. It's...
All right. Tend to your hot water bottle. What a sorry substitute for...
Good night, Captain.
Good night, Mrs. Newman. Good afternoon. It's about time you came upstairs. Been waiting for hours. Why I agreed to see you only in this room?
You'll talk to me like a gentleman, Captain Gregg, or I'll go straight downstairs.
Who the devil said you could chop down my tree out there?
I ordered it chopped down.
But hang it on, madam. I planted that tree with my own two hands.
Think how much prettier your garden will look with a rose bed.
I detest roses. I hope the whole blasted bed dies of blight.
Captain Gregg, if you insist on haunting me, you might at least be more agreeable about it.
Why should I be agreeable?
Well, as long as we're living together... if we're to be thrown together so much, life's too short to be forever barking at each other.
Your life may be short, madam, but I have an unlimited time at my disposal.
Then say something pleasant for a change.
Well, that's a pretty dress you have on.
Thank you.
Much better than smothering yourself in all that black crepe.
I happen to have been wearing mourning for my husband.
Whom you didn't love.
How dare you say that?
Because it's true.
You're jealous because no one put on any mourning for you.
That shows how little you know about it.
Some poor misguided female, no doubt.
5 poor misguided females, to be exact.
I should think you'd be ashamed instead of boasting about it.
Why? They misguided themselves. Never raised a finger to help.
That's not what I've heard about sailors.
Seaman, confound it. Sailor. Sailor is a landlubber's word. Now, why did you marry him?
Edwin? I don't really know. He seemed so romantic.
But it was different afterwards, hmm? Did he beat you?
Oh, no. Poor Edwin never really did anything. He was an architect, but not a very good one, I'm afraid. He couldn't have designed a house like this. Who did design it?
I did, of course.
It reminds me of something. An old song or a poem.
Magic casements opening on the foam of perilous seas in fairy lands forlorn.
Strange to find a sea captain quoting Keats.
Oh, life can go slow at sea. Plenty of time for reading in the off watches.
How wonderful it must be. Reading lyric poetry up in the crow's nest. With a sheet bellying in the wind.
Sails, blasted old madam. A sheet is a line, a rope. Ropes can't belly.
Well, I don't know anything about the sea except that it's romantic.
That's what all landsmen think. Seamen know better.
Then why do they go to sea?
Because they haven't got enough sense to stay home. Like those two women at the front door.
What two women?
Look out the window.
No.
Huh? Who are they?
My blasted in-laws. And Martha's sure to send them up here.
Well, well, what do you want of me?
Well, do something. Hide. Go away and decompose.
Dematerialize, madam.
But whatever it is, do it quickly. They're on the stairs.
Oh, no fear. They can't hear or see me unless I choose that they should.
Oh, then please don't choose. I'll get rid of them.
Why don't you let me? You know, I've had considerable experience.
No, you're not to do anything.
Well, Lucy, talking to yourself?
Oh, my poor Lucy. So pale, so fragile.
Mother Muir, Eva, how nice of you to call.
Martha said you were up here resting. Oh, how can you rest in such an ugly room?
Lucy, poor, poor child.
And what a hideous portrait on the wall.
With a face like yours, madam, you'd be wise to shut up.
Oh, no.
Why on earth don't you take it down?
Because I like it, Eva.
Liar.
Well, of course, if you want a portrait of a strange man in your room, well, that's up to you.
Oh, Lucy, we have such bad news. The gold shares, your entire income.
What about the gold shares?
They're worthless. The mine is closed down.
No more dividends, Lucy. It was all in this morning's newspaper.
Oh.
So we've come to take you and Anna back home with us.
Eva... Eva, you're sure of this?
Of course.
No, no, don't make a scene in front of these swabs.
I don't intend to make a scene.
Oh, of course you don't. You're my brave little girl.
Please, Mother Muir.
Make her stop that caterwauling, or by Judas, I will take a hand.
You keep out of this.
Lucy, how can you talk to me like that?
Oh, blast.
Eva, did you hear what she said?
Yes, Mother, I heard. Now stop sniveling.
But I didn't mean you.
Then just whom did you mean? You're acting in a most peculiar fashion, Lucy. Obviously, this dreadful place has preyed on your mind.
Bats in your belfry.
Pipe down.
What?
I mean, I want to think.
But why? With your income gone, you'll have to come home with us.
Don't do it, Lucy.
Do you want me to stay?
Yes.
Lucy, are you out of your mind?
You really mean it?
Of course I mean it.
Lucy, Lucy.
I'm sorry, Mother. It's very kind of you, but... I'm going to stay. I'll manage somehow. So please be good enough to shove off.
Shove off? She's insane. I want nothing more to do with her. Well, you don't have to push me, Mother. I'm going.
Eva, I'm not pushing you.
Stop it, Mother, please.
But I'm not touching you, Eva.
Go. Oh, nothing.
Captain Gregg. Captain Gregg.
I'm out on the balcony.
Are you? Well, I've had just about all of this. I'm going to stand.
Stop talking in riddles.
2 days ago, you shoved those poor women out of this house.
Squealing like a couple of pigs.
That wasn't enough, was it? What do you mean by pushing Mr. Coombs down the stairs just now? I only hope that when I reach the afterlife, I'll have a little more dignity.
Dignity? You call it dignified, throwing yourself at a herring-guttered swab like Coombs?
I asked Mr. Coombs here because he's the logical man to help me find lodgers for the summer.
So, lodgers? Oh, I made a mistake. Oh, forgive me, my dear. I thought you wanted to sign Coombs on for a husband.
Mr. Coombs, that walrus?
Well, it's my experience that women will do anything for money.
And now you and your blasted experience have ruined everything.
Why? I could not allow lodgers in any case. They're worse than passengers at sea.
It's them or starve.
Not at all. I've solved your problem. Madam... You're going to write a book.
Book? Don't be ridiculous. It's all I can do to write a postcard.
But I can write a book, and you can put it down on paper for me.
What sort of a book?
The story of my life. Ride and Swash. Yes. Ride and Swash by Captain X.
I don't think that's at all a nice title.
It's not meant to be. It's meant to be sensational, like the subject.
But it takes months to write a book. What are we to live on in the meantime?
Well, you have a little jewelry. Pawn it.
Oh, but I couldn't.
Oh, blast your eyes, madam. Will you understand you're trying to claw off a leash or? You can't afford to be squeamish.
I do understand, and don't swear at me.
All right, then be sensible. Now, since we're going to be collaborators, you may call me Daniel.
That's very good of you.
And I shall call you Lucia.
My name is Lucy.
No, it doesn't do you justice, my dear. Women named Lucy are always being imposed upon. But Lucia, now... There is a name for an Amazon, for a queen.
I don't feel much like a queen. I feel frightened and confused. Martha and I could always get along, but it's my baby, it's Anna.
Well, don't you trust me?
Oh, I do, Daniel, when I'm talking to you. But when you're not here, I... Well, it's asking a great deal to expect anyone to entrust our whole future to someone who isn't real.
But I am real, Lucia. I'm here because you believe I'm here. Keep on believing, and I'll always be real to you.
Yes, Daniel.
Now, get into town and pawn your blaster jewelry, and don't come back without a typewriter. Ah, yes, Blood and Swash by Captain X.
Two of The Ghost and Mrs. Muir will continue in a moment. Libby, have you any romantic tidbits for our audience tonight?
Well, it's not a big name story, Mr. Kennedy, but a very unusual, real wedding took place on the set of My Wild Irish Rose during the last week of shooting.
Oh, who were the lucky people?
Two of the dancers in this fabulous new musical of Warner Brothers. And just imagine, Andrea King was the matron of honor. She looked almost like a bride herself in hand-embroidered white batiste. It was one of the costumes she wears in the picture.
And the best man?
Dennis Morgan.
Well.
Andrea's romantic leading man. In fact, the entire cast of My Wild Irish Rose came as guests, and they looked very colorful in their Celtic costumes.
Did the bride wear something old, something new, something borrowed, something blue?
Uh-huh. And Andrea saw to the new. She gave us some gossamer sheer nylons with embroidered clocks of tiny seed pearls.
You mean to wear?
Why, certainly. Andrea told her just to lux them, and they'd wear beautifully. And I'm sure that's true because lux flakes are so gentle, even the sheerest nylons last twice as long.
You're absolutely right, Libby. Those famous strain tests proved it. Runs came sooner when stockings were washed with strong soap or rubbed with cake soap. All kinds of stockings, nylons, silk, rayon, and cotton, lasted twice as long when they were washed with lux flakes.
That's just like getting an extra pair of stockings every time you buy a pair. And remember, girls, Lux Care prolongs the wear of everyday stockings as well as super shears. So lux them after every wearing. Luxed stockings last twice as long.
We return you now to William Keeley.
Act Two of The Ghost and Mrs. Muir, starring Charles Boyer as Captain Gregg and Madeline Carroll as Lucy. Summer has come to Whitecliff by the sea, but there's no clamor of lodgers in Gull Cottage. Instead, week after week, the constant clatter of a typewriter as the ghost of Captain Daniel Gregg dictates the vivid story of his life to Lucy Muir.
Well? Why have you stopped typing? You didn't finish the sentence.
It's that awful word, Daniel.
It's a perfectly good word.
I think it's a horrible word.
It means what it says, doesn't it?
All too clearly.
Oh, hang it all, Lucia. If you're going to be prudish, we'll never get the book finished. Now, where was I?
Upstairs.
Oh, yes, yes. The customs of Marseille are different to any...
From any.
Oh, who cares? This is not a blast literary epic. It is the unvarnished story of a seaman's life.
It certainly is unvarnished.
All right, smear on some varnish then, but leave the guts in it.
I think there should be a chapter about your boyhood, your school days.
Never went to school. I was educated by the vicar.
Poor man, he must have had a dreadful time.
Oh, I suppose you were a model of all the virtues at 12.
Certainly I was, and Anna shall be the same.
Anna is not fat, as you probably were.
I wasn't fat, I was skinny.
Still worse. Hair ribbons and 1,000 freckles, probably. I notice you still have freckles.
Very few, and I've been told they're quite becoming.
Huh? Let me see. Yeah, yeah, they are there.
Oh, good heavens, the time.
All right, get some sleep. We'll put in a full day tomorrow. Oh, Lucia, you're sure you've said nothing about my being here? I mean, Martha knows nothing. Your little girl?
Of course not. They know I'm busy writing a book, but that's all. You've been very thoughtful about keeping your promise not to disturb them.
Madam, I'm a man of my word.
And what words? Daniel, what did your aunt do when you ran away to sea?
Oh, thank heaven, probably, that there was no one around to fill her house with mongrel dogs and track mud on her carpets.
Did she write to you?
Every Sunday, for 7 years. I was at sea when she died.
What are you thinking?
How lonely she must have been, with her silent, empty house and her clean carpets.
Good night, Lucia.
Oh, the devil with your dawdling, Lucia.
But I'm so tired, Daniel.
Oh, I sent a sort to and the book is all finished.
I can't see straight or think straight.
You don't have to think. Just write this down. To all who follow the hard and honorable profession of the sea, to the after guard, to masters, mates, and engineers, to able-bodied and ordinary seamen, to stokers, carpenters, sailmakers, and sea cooks, I dedicate this volume. The end.
The end.
Well, tomorrow you take it to the publishers.
Why did you write the book, Daniel? It wasn't merely to save the house for me.
Partly that, and partly to help people understand those poor devils who go to sea for want of better sense. Well, now, about the publishers. You'll go to Tackett and Sproul in Great Smith Street.
Yes, Daniel.
Now, be sure you see Sproul. He once came in fourth in a yacht race. Fancies himself a seafaring man.
Daniel, I... What's to become of us? You and me?
Well, nothing's to become of me. Everything's happened that can happen. Have you forgotten I'm an illusion?
Such an earthy illusion. When we were writing the book, I was happy. But now, when I try to think of the future, it's all dark and confused. Like that fog out there tonight.
Oh, you've been working too hard. Cooped up in the house too long.
But I love it here.
Yes, but you should be out in the world, meeting people, seeing men.
I have no desire to see men.
Well, confound it, you should. You know, you are a very attractive woman. You owe it to yourself.
Yes, Daniel.
Now, take the early train, Lucia. Tackett and Sproul, Great Smith Street.
Impossible, madam. You can't see Mr. Sproul without an appointment.
But I have a manuscript here, and I'm sure
a cookbook, perhaps. Gardening. Another life of Byron. Oh, really, Mrs. Muir? Oh, well, I'll mail you a notice when Mr. Sproul can see you, probably next month.
Thank you.
Surely, you're not leaving, Mrs. Muir?
I have no appointment.
Then you shall have mine.
But Mr. Fairley...
Oh, it's all right, Albert. Just tell old Sproul I wouldn't wait. Well... Aren't you going to thank me?
It's very good of you, but I'm afraid I can't accept.
You're a very beautiful creature. I can do no less than insist that you take my appointment.
Mr. Sproul, see Mr. Fairley, Albert.
Well, Mrs. Muir, are you going in, or shall I carry you in?
Really? Really?
I don't know how you got in here, young woman, but this much I do know. I will not allow you to take up my time, and I will not review your manuscript. Shut up and sit down, you blessed grampus.
Oh, dear.
Madam... Are you a would-be author or a would-be ventriloquist?
I don't know what you're talking about, Mr. Sproul.
I distinctly heard... And such a nice-looking woman, too.
Mr. Sproul, please. This book, it isn't what you think it is at all. It's the unvarnished record of a sailor's... I mean, seaman's life.
Seaman? What could you know about seamen?
Oh, a great deal, believe me.
Unvarnished, you say?
Shamefully so.
Oh, dear me. Well, perhaps I'll glance at it after all. Sit down, young woman. Sit down.
Better take another walk, Mr. Fairley. She's still in there with Mr. Sproul.
She must be starving.
Oh, I fetched them a tray of lunch some time ago.
I'll wait, Albert. I'll wait.
Well, Mrs. Muir, this is quite a book.
Thank you.
You're not going to pretend that you wrote it.
No.
No, no, it's a man's book. And what a man. Captain X. I'd like very much to meet him.
Oh, I'm afraid that's impossible. He's away.
Oh, a voyage, of course.
Yes, a very long voyage.
Oh, bless my soul, what a story. We shall publish it, of course, Mrs. Muir. You just leave everything to me and... be happy that you know such a man. There aren't many like him these days. You appreciate that.
I think I do, Mr. Sproul. And thank you very much.
Got lots of stuffy upstairs. I thought I'd wait for you down here.
Mr. Fairley.
Quite an appointment you had, wasn't it? But it's pouring now, and you haven't an umbrella.
I'm quite capable of finding a cab.
Oh, now, please. I deserve a minute, don't I? Mm.
Dear me, I certainly didn't bargain for this blasted rain.
As you said, you could find a cab. Ruin your hat, though, wouldn't it? Now, if you asked me nicely.
Please, would you mind?
Ah, you're smiling. I'll be right back. But why shouldn't I ride to the station with you? Perhaps I, too, must catch a train.
I don't believe it. Really, Mr. Fairley, the sheer...
Brass. The word you're looking for is brass.
Exactly. Still, anyway, I should be grateful to you. You see, Mr. Sproul has agreed to publish my book.
He always had a weakness for feminine literature.
Well, this book might surprise you.
It's surprising enough to find a lady author infinitely more exciting than her heroine could possibly be.
I assume you also write, Mr. Fairley?
Yes. Children's books. Forgive me, Mrs. Muir, but I am Uncle Neddy.
Uncle Neddy?
Ridiculous, isn't it?
Why, you're adored by half the children in the world.
Oh, I loathe the little monsters.
My little girl is not a monster.
I shall make an exception, then. I look forward to meeting her, Mrs. Muir. Your husband also.
My husband is dead.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, what a liar I am. I'm not sorry at all. As a matter of fact, I'm... your book. Tell me about your book.
Uncle Neddy. By Godfrey, what a load of bilge.
Daniel, so you've been eavesdropping.
I thought he said he had to catch a train, too.
I rather think he only wanted to ride to the station with me.
The way he was smirking at you, like a cat at a fishmonger's.
I found him rather charming.
Rather charming. Now you're starting to talk like him.
Well, how in blue blazes do you want me to talk?
Has better.
I think you're being extremely childish.
You should have pushed him out of the cab. In another minute, I would have.
Daniel, why, I believe you're jealous.
Well, of course I'm not jealous. Jealousy is a disease of the flesh. I haven't had any flesh for years.
I've never known you to be more disagreeable. And today, of all days...
Yes, Prowse bought the book.
Yes, and now I can buy the house just as we planned.
I'm not so sure I want you to have the house after all.
I wish you'd stop this sulking. You said yourself that I should see men.
Yes, I said men, not a perfumed pencil pusher.
Anyway, I shall never see him again.
That's what you think.
Where are you going?
I'm disappearing. Always hated trains anyway. I'll see you later, madam.
Martha! Martha, where's Anna?
She's in the orchard with Uncle Neddy.
But I didn't expect him till tea time.
Every day this week he's called.
I can't be rude to him, Martha.
I can. He's out there painting a picture.
How exciting. Whenever you're ready, we'll have tea in the garden.
Yes, ma'am.
I like your little girl, Lucy. She's very wise. For instance, how did she ever guess I wanted to be alone with you?
If you bribed her to go away...
Aren't you interested in what I was painting before?
You're quite accomplished, aren't you? I should think being Uncle Neddy would satisfy anyone.
No, I also paint. Under the name of Renoir.
Oh, you're such a fool, Miles.
You know, that's quite the nicest thing you've ever said to me.
And what, if anything, do you do as Miles Fairley?
Specifically... I behave quite idiotically towards a young lady that I fell in love with in a publisher's office.
Miles, please.
Lucy, am I being unforgivably offensive?
It's just that I'm... Well, I don't quite know what to say.
Then say nothing. Take a look at this canvas.
Why? It's me. You've been painting me in my bathing costume.
Mm-hmm. Every morning I've watched you and Anna on the beach. Not too bad, is it?
It's very flattering, really.
Oh, Lucy, darling, it would take 1,000 Renoirs to... Oh, Lucy.
You shouldn't have done that. You shouldn't have kissed me.
And that was unforgivable, wasn't it? But I shall not go away, even if you send me. And I shall see you again, even though you forbid it.
I'm sure I have no control over where you go or what you do.
Then you won't forbid it.
Miles, please. If you do want to see me, go away now.
Yes, Lucy. If you want it, my darling.
wonder you wanted to plant a rose garden here.
Daniel.
Perfect setting to be kissed in.
You've been spying on me again.
No, merely happened to be haunting the vicinity. Why did you let him?
I didn't. He took me unawares.
Now, when a woman is kissed, it's because she wishes to be kissed.
That's nothing but masculine conceit.
Well, now what happens?
Miles Fairley is staying at the inn in the village, as well you know. He'll either remain there or go away. It doesn't matter to me one way or the other.
I think it matters more than you'll admit.
Well, then why bother to ask me? You seem to know my mind better than I do.
He puts brilliantine on his hair.
Most men do.
You can find an excuse for everything.
Only because you're attacking him.
I know. It's a natural human reaction.
Oh, I wish you wouldn't be so superior just because you're not alive.
And he is. Yes, very much so.
It's no crime to be alive.
No. No, my dear. No. Only sometimes it's a great inconvenience. The living can be hurt.
I don't intend to be hurt. But if I'm to go about in the world as you said, it will mean taking risks.
And real happiness is worth almost any risk. Well, watch your soundings, Lucia.
I will, Daniel. I only wish
you... You're all alone in the garden, ma'am?
Oh, have some tea, Martha.
But that's odd now. I swear I heard you talking. Is Uncle Nettie still about?
No, he's gone.
Mum, it's none of my business. But what's he up to?
I rather think he's going to ask me to marry him.
And you'd be willing to?
I might. Why shouldn't I?
Because he ain't good enough for you. That's why not. He's the kind of man no decent woman would associate with.
Martha!
I've got a right to my feelings, Mum, and I've got a feeling about him. Oh, I'm sorry. It's just that I've been so worried about you lately, Mum.
Don't worry, Martha. I know he isn't perfect, but he's real.
Real?
I thought I was impervious to emotion, but I'm not. I need companionship and laughter and all the things a woman needs.
Well, I hope he can give them to you. I'll go fetch Anna, Mum. Excuse me.
Well, Daniel, haven't you anything to say?
The sea in the moonlight, Lucy, and a warm summer night. I could stay here forever, my darling.
I've never felt like this before, Miles.
How do you feel?
I don't know. Like looking down from high up, all dizzy and unsure.
You won't fall. I'll hold you.
It isn't right. It can't be to feel like this.
It is right. Because you're happy.
I should go back to the house. It's Anna's bedtime.
Oh, just this one night. Can't you pretend you've forgotten?
Miles, what's wrong, darling?
I'm jealous of a little girl.
She's my daughter. I can't forget her.
When you're with me, I want you to forget everyone else in the whole world.
You're a magician. You make it seem all wrong to consider my duty. And only right that I put my arms around you to be kissed, to be loved.
Lucia, can you hear me? Asleep, huh? I thought you were one woman with sense, but you're like all the rest of them. Lucia, wake up. I'm talking to you. Blasted all I said it. But... No, sleep on, Lucia. Sleep. I should have known. You've made your choice, the only choice you could make. You've chosen life, and that is as it should be. Whatever the reckoning. That's why I must go away. I can't help you now. Lucia, listen to me. Listen, my dear. You've been dreaming. Even now, you are dreaming. Dreaming of a sea captain that haunted this house. Of talks you've had with him. Even a book you both wrote together. But you wrote the book, Lucia. You and no one else. A book you imagine from this house and from that portrait on the wall. Now, it's been a dream. And in the years to come, you'll remember it only as a dream. And it will die as all dreams die, at waking. But how you would have loved the North Cape and the fjords in the midnight sun. where the blue water rushes into green, the Falklands, where a southerly gale whips the whole sea white as snow. What we both have missed, Lucia. What we both have missed. Goodbye, Lucia. Goodbye, my darling.
We pause now for station identification. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
And you are listening to Radio Vault on WHFR Dearborn. Making waves from Henry Ford College. Back to Lux.
Before we bring you Act 3 of The Ghost and Mrs. Muir, I want to introduce a delightful young lady whom 20th Century Fox has recently added to his roster of young talent, Miss Jane Nye. In fact, Jane is so photogenic that a portrait of her won her a screen test. Have you met any of the top-ranking stars yet, Jane?
Yes, Joan Crawford. I met her the first day she started work on Daisy Canyon.
Oh, that's a picture Joan was keen to play in from the moment she read the book.
And she was wonderful in the love scenes with Dana Andrews.
Yeah, Joan knows how to get dramatic value out of a scene, too. Like the later scenes in Daisy Canyon, when she's married to Henry Fonda.
And she always looks so lovely.
Thank you, Jane Nye, for being here tonight. Back now to our producer, William Keeley.
Act 3 of The Ghost and Mrs. Muir, with Charles Boyer as Captain Gregg and Madeline Carroll as Lucy. The coming of Miles Fairley into the life of Lucy Muir has marked the passing of the ghost of Captain Gregg. But Lucy scarcely noticed his disappearance in her love for her handsome suitor and the excitement over the success of a book called Blood and Swash.
Imagine it, Martha. A check for £200 from Mr. Sproul.
Another £200 for that awful book? La mère, ma'am, such language.
And Mr. Sproul wants me to go to London immediately. Some more papers to sign.
Then off to town you go, ma'am. Don't you worry about Anne and me.
But I can't possibly go to London. Mr. Fairley's coming. We're having a picnic.
You mean he is?
I heard you, Martha. Please remember that I'm going to marry him.
Yes, ma'am.
By the way, I've been thinking, we might put that portrait of Captain Gregg up in the attic.
Don't you like it anymore?
Oh, it was so silly of me to hang it here in my bedroom. I don't know what possessed me.
Yes, ma'am. Oh, I most forgot. Here, boy brought this note for you from the village.
Oh?
From the bank, is it, ma'am?
No, it's from Mr. Fairley. Oh, how dreadful. He's been called up to London for a few days. But it's not dreadful at all. I'll go to London, too. I'll see Mr. Sproul as he wishes, and I'll see Miles. I'll surprise him, Martha. Quickly now, fetch Anna. I must say goodbye to her.
Yes, ma'am?
I'd like to see Mr. Fairley, please. I'm Mrs. Muir.
Thank you, ma'am. If you'll wait in there, please.
Who's that, Hilda?
And Mrs. Muir, ma'am.
Oh? Perhaps I can help you, Mrs. Muir. Did I hear you say you wanted to see my husband?
Husband?
If you don't mind waiting, he'll be back soon.
I see.
Won't you sit down?
No, I'd better go. I'm afraid I made a mistake.
Mistake, Mrs. Muir?
Yes, I'm very sorry.
I think I understand, my dear. I'm sorry, too. Truly, I am. You see, it isn't the first time something like this has happened.
Come now, Mum. You've all but cried your eyes out. You're home now, where you belong.
Oh, Father, what a fool. What a fool.
There. He ain't worth it. Blast his eyes, he ain't worth it.
Day this is?
Wash day.
Yes, but it was exactly a year ago that we came here. You remember that afternoon? I went upstairs and I lay down before tea.
You're hitting for a cup of tea, Mum.
No, Martha. I'm thinking of the dream I had that afternoon a year ago. Such a strange dream. Oh, well.
Anna will be coming home from school soon, Mum. Will you be taking her for a walk along the beach?
Of course. I wouldn't miss it for the world. My little girl, Martha. She's all my life now.
And most of mine, too.
Soon there'll be no more walks. All too soon. She's growing up. School, then a university. Young men. Marriage. Oh, Martha, it will be on us before we know it. Before we know it.
Dear Mother, it's so strange here at the university, so utterly different than Whitecliff. But I love it, darling. If only I didn't miss you and Martha so much. I count the days to...
It's incredible, Martha. I just don't believe it. Anna will be 18 on Friday. Well, come on, we'll walk to the village. We must get her package off to her today.
And I'll be home on Saturday, Mother. Don't worry, I haven't been thrown out of the university. Just a wonderful opportunity to motor down to see you. And maybe, darling, maybe to surprise you, too. You see, there's a young man I met.
Darling, oh, I'm so glad to see you.
Did you get my letter, Mother?
Yes, dear, but I don't understand. I wish you'd be more specific in your letters.
Come on in, Bill. Well, am I being specific now? Don't be shy, Bill. Here she is, my mother.
How do you do?
How do you do?
His real name is Sir Evelyn Anthony Scaife, and we're thinking of getting engaged.
Anna!
Believe me, Mrs. Muir, I haven't even asked her yet.
We've come for your blessing, Mother, and we haven't had tea.
Anna, you quite take my breath away.
Bill, darling, just make yourself at home in there. We'll sing out when we want you. We'll be in the kitch. Two more for tea, Martha.
Anna. Oh, just look at them. She's home. She's really home.
And you'll find a strange man in the living room. I gather his name is Sir Evelyn Scaife, and Anna wants to marry him.
I met him at a dance, Mother. He's a sub-lieutenant in the Navy. You know my weakness for sailor men. Oh, I've never been so happy in all my life.
Then I'm happy too, darling. And I won't waste time now with questions.
Now, I can't make tea with such distractions going on. Out in the garden now if you want to talk, both of you.
Mother, I've discussed it all with Bill. Of course, we won't get married till I'm out of the university. But you ought to come and live with us when we do. You and Martha.
No, darling, no.
Oh, but you must. You've been alone so much of your life.
You're sweet, Anna. And I'm proud of you. But I love this house. I've been very happy here. And I shall live here until I die.
With Captain Gregg?
What did you say?
With the ghost of Captain Gregg?
Anna, what are you talking about?
Oh, I knew the captain very well when I was a little girl. First year we lived here. We used to have the most wonderful talks.
You didn't.
Oh, it was all a game I'd made up, of course. Sort of a dream game. It was very real while it lasted. And then he stopped coming suddenly. I suppose I was growing too old and sophisticated for him. Oh, but I grieved and grieved. I even... Mother, darling, you look as if you'd seen a... Don't tell me you see him, too.
No, Anna. No, not for years.
Well, then you did. Mother, you don't suppose he really haunted us?
No, darling. Things like that can't happen. It was only a dream.
The same dream for both of us?
Perhaps I set you off by telling you about my dreams. Little girls are very impressionable.
Oh, I don't remember your telling me. Oh, tell me now. I'd love to hear about them.
But I can't remember them very well. Just bits and pieces, a phrase here and there. A look. I think I dreamed most of that book I wrote. I must have. I never could have thought of it. All these years I've tried to remember, but I can't.
Do you know what I think? I think you fell in love with him, too.
I did nothing of the sort.
Oh, I wouldn't blame you if you had. When did you stop seeing him?
After about a year. I dreamed we quarreled. It was about a man.
Uncle Neddy.
Anna, you knew that Miles Fairley and I
were... Oh, I used to pray you wouldn't marry him.
And you were so right. I saw him 5 years ago at a dinner party. Bald and fat and drinking too much. And he cried. It seems his wife finally had enough and left him. And to think I wanted to spend the rest of my life with him.
Perhaps he did exist, Mother, Captain Gregg. Perhaps he did come back and talk to us. Wouldn't it be wonderful if he had? Then you'd have something, you know what I mean, to look back on. Happiness.
No, darling. We just made him up, you and I. He never existed. I just wasn't intended to have that kind of happiness. And I haven't missed it, really, I haven't. Oh, I've been lonely at times, but there have been compensations. You, and now Bill. And dear Martha, and this house, the sea and the gulls. And memories. I've had those, you know, even if it was a dream. Now come along. We'll join your young man for tea.
If she thinks it was a dream, I cannot blame her. It was all my own doing. I told her it was a dream. How long ago this occurred. Even Anna is older now than Lucia was when she first stepped into this house. Anna, long since married, children of her own, grown children. And Lucia, white and withered and full of years. Ah, blast it all. When I decided to be noble, I never thought she'd live to be 80. Lucia! Lucia!
You come in here, Mum. What are you doing out on that balcony? Don't you know what the night air does to you?
I'm coming, Martha. I'm coming.
What were you doing out there?
I don't know. What difference does it make?
I hope you remember what the doctor told you.
That I'm an old woman. Well, so is he. There was a letter this afternoon from Anna. Little Lucy's engaged.
Little Lucy?
To the captain of a transatlantic airplane. Anna's very happy about it. Says it must run in the family.
Airplanes?
I suppose she means captains.
Here, you drink your hot milk.
I'm too tired. And I have a funny pain in my arm.
No wonder standing out there in that fog. Sit down now and drink it while it's hot.
I don't want any hot milk.
Now, don't get into a state.
I am not in a state. I just want to be left alone. Bossing me around all the time.
Well, I'll leave it on the table. Take it or not, I don't care.
Bossing me. I'm tired. Milk. All right, I'll drink it. Martha. Martha. I feel so...
Lucia, at last. You'll never be tired again, Lucia, or old again. Look at you, radiant, like the day you came here. Come, Lucia. Come, my dear.
Our stars will return for their curtain calls in a moment.
Back now.
Here's Mr. Keeley at the microphone.
Brought the ghost and Mrs. Muir so vividly and happily to life. Charles Boyer and Madeline Carroll. Madeline, you don't know how happy we are to welcome you on this stage again, and how proud we are of your war record overseas.
Well, Bill, you can't imagine how happy I am to be back. And to be teamed for the first time on Lux with Charles Boyer.
The feeling is mutual, believe me, Madeleine. But I understand that in addition to all your other work overseas, you had your own radio show in Paris.
That's right, Charles, for about a year after VE Day. We broadcast once a week in French to tell the French about America and Americans.
Well, everything I've heard from France these past few years has been about the wonderful job you did for French-American relations.
And you haven't done such a bad job either, Charles.
Right, Bill. Almost everything I heard in Paris concerning Hollywood was about Charles Boyer's French Research Foundation and what it was doing to create a better understanding and appreciation of France.
Well, thank you, Madeleine. But coming back to this theater, Bill, I'm sure your audience is keen to hear about the show for next week.
And I'm sure they'll be keen about the show itself. It's Universal International's quite recent screen hit, Ride the Pink Horse, with his three fine stars, Robert Montgomery, Wanda Hendrix, and Thomas Gomez.
That's the picture that Bob himself directed, isn't it, Bill?
Yes, and it's a truly thrilling screenplay drama, a story of mystery and adventure that should keep our audience guessing breathlessly what's coming next, and usually, I'll wager, guessing wrong.
Sounds like a real hit, Bill. We'll be listening in my house. Bonsoir.
Good night.
Bonsoir et merci bien. Lever Brothers Company, the makers of Lux Flakes, join me in inviting you to be with us again next Monday evening when the Lux Radio Theater presents Robert Montgomery, Wanda Hendrix, and Thomas Gomez in Ride the Pink Horse. This is William Keeley saying goodnight to you from Hollywood.
Charles Boyer will soon be seen in the Enterprise production, Arch of Triumph. Our music was directed by Louis Silvers. And this is your announcer, John Milton Kennedy, reminding you to join us again next Monday night to hear Ride the Pink Horse with Robert Montgomery, Wanda Hendrix, and Thomas Gomez. Stay tuned for My Friend Irma, which follows immediately over most of these stations. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Please join WHFR Radio on Friday from 2 p.m. till 4 p.m. for Highway 61 and the best in new blues releases and Detroit Blues with DJ Kitty Love on the 89.3 FM airwaves from Henry Ford College at WHFR.FM.
Founded in 2016 and sponsored by the Detroit Regional Chamber of Commerce, the Detroit Promise ensures that any student graduating from any high school in the city of Detroit will have a tuition-free path to an associate degree or technical certificate. Henry Ford College has been a proud participant in the Detroit Promise since the beginning. With 66% of all Detroit Promise students attending HFC, it is the largest Detroit Promise enrollment of any college. For more information, visit hfcc.edu/Detroit-Promise or DetroitPromise.com today.
All right. That is just about going to wrap it for today's Radio Vault extravaganza. We just heard the Lux Radio Theater from December 1st of 47. Earlier today, we heard a foreplay of the Jack Benny Show, all from 1953. If you're a fan of the mysteries and the suspense, we do that on Sunday night. Sunday night between 9 p.m. and 12 midnight. Right here on WHFR 89.3. That's, once again, going to do it for today. We're going to leave you with the music of Eyal Vilner, the Eyal Vilner Big Band from Israel. We'll talk to you soon.
broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn, listener-supported, non-commercial radio, featuring local and independent artists.
Welcome to a special edition of Mountain Stage with your host, Kathy Matea.
There's a spring in the mountain and it flows down to the town.
From NPR Music and produced by West Virginia Public Broadcasting with support provided by Bailey Glasser. Welcome to another Mountain Stage with our host, Kathy Matea.
There's a song in my heart, just a simple little tune. But the rhythm and the melody won't leave me alone. Around the world, it's just a simple song. This world is turning around a simple song.
Hello, and welcome to a special episode of Mountain Stage. Around the world, it's just a simple song. I'm Kathy Matea, and today we're bringing you a collection of performances by musicians and groups from all corners of the globe who brought their culture to us here in the Mountain State. And we brought it to you, our faithful and curious listeners. We'll hear live performances from